like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present.
Thank you. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? There being none, I'll just make reference to the upcoming public meetings. There's a public information meeting with respect to a town-initiated official plan amendment regarding Bowen Road lands to permit industrial uses, and that's scheduled for Thursday, February the 9th, 2017, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. in the Town Hall atrium. There's a meeting to approve the general levy budget on Monday, February the 13th, which is next Monday, and that's part of the regular council meeting, which starts at 6 p.m. And there's a public meeting with respect to a town-initiated official plan amendment regarding the Bowen Road lands. That's the town official plan meeting, and that is that's Tuesday, February the 21st, because Monday's the holiday, and that's at 6 p.m. in the town hall at the council chambers. And we have a public meeting this evening, and I understand that Daryl Vanderveen is going to provide the council with some background. This is a public meeting with respect to a property rezoning by George Boboros, 4099 Niagara River. And Vanderveen, if you provide the background information, you can give reference to the notification of this meeting and provide us with background that we require. After Mr. Vanderveen has completed his comments to council, I'll ask the proponent if he wishes to address council, and thereafter I'll ask members of the public if they wish to address council with respect to the application. Mr. Vanderveen, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Worship. A zoning bylaw amendment application was received from George Boboros on behalf of Lori Lynn Boboros for the property located on the south side of Niagara River Parkway, west of Switch Road. The municipal address is 4099 Niagara River Parkway. The purpose of the proposed zoning bylaw amendment is to permit creation of an infill lot from the subject property. Servicing along Switch Road is limited to sanitary sewer, so a site-specific zoning exception is required to permit the creation of a new lot without a public water service. The application for consent to sever will involve the severance of a 0.33-acre lot with 51.83 meters of frontage along Switch Road. The proposed lot will not have frontage on the Niagara River Parkway. The proposed zoning bylaw amendment will change the zoning of the subject property from waterfront residential WR zone to a site-specific residential 1R1 zone with a zoning exception that permits a private water supply. Notification of the public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the January 13, 2017 edition of the Fort Erie Times newspaper. In addition, property owners within 120 meters were mailed a notice of complete application and public meeting on the same date. Okay, this is an aerial photograph of the subject lands as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Douglastown Black Creek neighborhood, east of Black Creek and south of the Niagara River. This is an aerial image highlighting the subject lands. Land surrounding the subject site comprise the following uses. North, single detached dwellings, Niagara River Parkway and the Niagara River. South, single detached dwellings along Switch Road, vacant wooded lands. East, single detached dwellings along the Niagara River Parkway in a hydro corridor. And west, single detached dwellings, hydro corridor and vacant wooded lands. The subject property is within the urban area boundary and is designated low-density residential on the Douglastown Black Creek Secondary Plan. The proposal to create an infill lot for a new residential dwelling meets the Secondary Plan policy. The Secondary Plan also contains policy that recognizes that sanitary sewer service is available along Switch Road, but not water service. Consent applications along Switch Road are permitted provided they, the new development connects to the sanitary sewer. Connection to water service will be required should it later become available. As no water service currently exists, a private water supply is acceptable. This zoning bylaw amendment complies with the land use policy of the secondary plan. This slide shows the natural heritage features in the vicinity of the site. A provincially significant wetland and environmental conservation area exists to the southwest of the subject lands. Circulation of the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority confirmed that no natural heritage features will be impacted by the proposed zoning bylaw amendment or future severance. The subject property is zoned waterfront residential WR zone in the town's comprehensive zoning bylaw number 129-90. This zoning bylaw amendment proposes to change the zoning of a portion of the property from waterfront residential zone to a site-specific residential 1 R1 zone that permits creation of a lot with a private water supply. The portion to be zoned residential 1 corresponds with the proposed new lot. The base zoning of the new lot is proposed to change from waterfront residential zone to R1 zone, as the new lot will not have any waterfront frontage along the Niagara River Parkway. This zoning bylaw is required as the proposed new lot is within the urban area boundary. The zoning bylaw requires new lots within the urban area boundary to have full servicing, water, and sanitary sewer. Only sanitary sewer servicing is available along Switch Road, so a zoning exception to permit a private water supply is required to address this issue and to permit the creation of a new lot. Okay, so this slide shows the subject property and the proposed building lot. The lot subject to this zoning bylaw amendment is shown as part one on the sketch. And this is a photo of the subject lands looking west from Switch Road, and that's the location of the proposed lot. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vanderveen. That was very concise and provides us with all the information we require. Any members of council here who have any questions? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship, through you to Mr. Vanderveen. Nice presentation for your first time out.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about slide 7, if I may. So I just couldn't see the distance between that one solid line going this way to the garage. What is that distance in there?
What do you mean?
By the corner?
The setback?
Yes, the setback.
2.01 meters.
And is that setback far enough for that development if somebody was to purchase that land?
Yes, I believe that's in compliance with our zoning bylaw.
And the total acreage for that particular lot, how much is that?
About for the retained portion or the whole site?
No, just the severed part.
Oh, the severed part is 0.33 acres, so a third of an acre.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions by members of council? Thank you very much, Mr. Vanderveen.
Oh, thank you.
Now, if Mr. Baboros or someone on his behalf wishes to address council, we'll hear from him. Good evening, sir. Please come forward if you have any comments that you wish to make to council.
Okay, I'm George Baboros. I'm husband/agent of the owner, Lori. I'm here to answer any questions that anybody has.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Baboros? Fairly straightforward so far. We'll see if you have any neighbors that don't agree with you. Please have a seat and we'll find out shortly. Is there anyone here who wishes to address council with respect to this application, either for or against or to ask questions? If there are none, then Mr. Baboros, seems like everything is hunky-dory. We'll be dealing with this shortly when we get to planning and development services on our agenda. I'm going to declare this meeting closed. Corey? Just wanted to make sure you're on your toes, Madam Clerk. Okay, so that concludes that public meeting. I'm going to then hand the chair over to Councillor McDermott, who will now be monitored by the clerk.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now in session. We have a presentation and delegation by Mr. Doug Darbison, Would you please approach the podium? And give us your name and address, please. You can carry on with your presentation. Thank you.
Email correspondence as an introduction to my topic this evening. What I would like to focus on is the reasons why the Committee of Adjustment made its decision on my consent application. The Committee of Adjustment minutes came out today. Opportunity to look at those minutes, but nevertheless, I will review for you what the committee considered and why they made their decision. In preparing for the Committee of Adjustment, I spoke to the Ministry of Tourism, Culture, and Sport, and they gave me two comments. First, an archaeological assessment is typically triggered by a new subdivision or housing development where development and site alteration is proposed. This is an infill lot with no housing proposed. Second comment from the ministry. The municipality is the approval authority in deciding if a consent will be subject to a condition. The Committee of Adjustment has the authority to allow some variation, some flexibility, and some relief from the application of planning policies and controls in making their decisions, on severance applications. That comment comes directly from the Fort Erie website for the Committee of Adjustment. That is their responsibility in making consent. I also contacted a licensed archaeologist, who was the opinion that my consent by itself, without any housing development proposed, should not necessarily trigger an archaeological assessment. In his view, my situation should not trigger a study, and the committee should be requested to exercise some discretion in making this decision regarding the region's requested study condition. Fact duly recognized. Fourth point, the town's official plan designates zones of archaeological potential, which is shown on Schedule D. The archaeologist I spoke to, Mr. Sean Austin, advised that this does not necessarily mean that an archaeological site or resources will be found. The lot is not within 300 meters of any known archaeological resource or a burial site. Given that the soils are very shallow and that the surrounding excavations have not revealed any artifacts, the potential of finding anything archaeologically significant is likely very limited. Fifth point. Policy 11.4.1 in the town's official plan regarding archaeological assessments recognizes small-scale applications such as minor variances, minor rezonings, and consents. The policy reads that in such minor cases, an archaeological assessment may be required, not will be required. Sixth point. A stage one and stage two archaeological assessment will cost between $6,500 and $7,500, not including HST, and field work cannot be started until spring or May. Requested assessment will delay the application another 6 months and add additional costs to the $10,000 in fees that have already paid the town and the region, and the NPC, for processing this application. Point seven, the City of Port Colborne recently approved two severances on Missioner Road, only a concession block away from my application, just outside the municipal boundary. No archaeological study condition. Long-term farming disturbances and the absence of nearby burial sites, cemeteries, etc., were cited by Port Colborne Committee of Adjustment as the reasons for not imposing further studying conditions. The minutes of the Committee of Adjustment meeting released today reflect that due consideration was given to these comments. Due consideration was also given to the comments of the region and all their comments received on writing. The committee specifically cited the fact that the soils were very shallow in this area, and excavations that have occurred on both sides of the proposed consent show no traces of anything to be found. Just an itemization of the kinds of excavations that have occurred. The house next door, property next door, is a very large house, and behind that is an over a 2-acre pond that was built or dug for fill around the house. That pond was excavated down to bedrock. The bedrock there is about 20 inches deep. The committee made the comment that there's two long driveways on both sides of this infill severance, both excavated, and I can tell you that my driveway was excavated down to bedrock. As bedrock is about 15 inches at the street line. There's over 100 trees that are planted both sides of this infill severance, and I can tell you that almost every tree that I planted was down to bedrock because the soils were so thin. So the committee adjustment did acknowledge that the soils were very shallow in this area. One committee member identified that he knew the area very well, and the soil is so shallow that bedrock could be found 7 inches deep. And this is obvious in certain areas where you can see the bedrock in the ditches. Other reasons for identifying or that were identified by the committee for rendering their decision focused on the applicant's confirmation to continue farming the property and planting trees. It was recognized that the barn on the property will be used to store existing farm equipment with no house intended to be built. And if the council would like, I have some exhibits that I brought here indicating that my house purchase, I have purchased a lot to build a new house, and I have tax assessments showing that I paid taxes on that lot. I also have some exhibits showing my farm equipment, if the council would like to see those. In summary, I would hope that the council sees that the Committee of Adjustment duly considered all of the input received in rendering its decision on my consent application. The notion of appealing this decision, in my view, would undermine the reasons for empowering the committee to make its decisions. My consent application has met all of the criteria for an infill severance. All standard requirements have been met. The only matter left is whether a condition should be imposed, the condition of an archaeological study, which is discretionary and not mandatory. I am very hopeful that council will agree with the decision rendered by the committee so that I can move forward with my plans for retirement.
Thank you, Mr. Darbison. Just stand by in case councilors have some questions. Are there any questions? Your worship.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Darbison, for your previous correspondence to us and your comments. I don't know anything about Sean Austin. Can you tell us anything about him?
Okay. The Ministry of Tourism, Culture and Sport recommended that I contact a number of archaeological consultants and gave me a list. He was one of the lists on the list. He's from Burlington, the closest one I could find. And I had quite a long chat with him, and he was the consultant that gave me a lot of the information that I presented here.
If I might, do you know if he's been in Fort Erie at all?
Most of them have. Yes, they have.
Do you know if this one has?
Not off the record, but no, I cannot tell you specifically.
I'm fine for now. Most of my questions really are to our staff. Thank you, Mr. Darbison.
Fritz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Darbison. Just a quick question on the bedrock, the depth of the bedrock. Do you have anything that gives you an average of the property, the depth? What would the average be?
Most of my diggings... my house is about 24 inches deep. I had to bring in 90 loads of soil to bring it up to the proper level. Most of my diggings were about 20 to 24 inches.
So probably average around 2 feet. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Darbison, I was looking at some of the email correspondence that you had provided to council as well as some staff correspondence that they provided to us as well. And I note that you first contacted staff to get this process going in 2015 and have had a consultation meeting with them as recently as March 2016. And from what I can gather, in almost every meeting there has been an overture or a direct request by staff that an archaeological study would be required, or at least be required by the town. That's their desire. Is that correct?
Requested.
Requested, yes, absolutely. You haven't made any work towards getting that done. Has it been your desire, the whole process, that you were going to seek relief from this request from the Committee of Adjustment? Is that the reason you did not pursue the archaeological survey as back as 2015?
That is precisely the reason. I might comment further on that.
Absolutely.
In the pre-consultation process, there's an exchange of information and requirements. The notion of a condition on a consent is dealt with at the consent stage. I did try to attend a pre-consultation meeting, but nobody showed up. But when I was informed that the region and the Conservation Authority had certain conditions they wanted to impose, I immediately wrote to the Planning Department expressing my concerns. So from the very outset, when I received the consultation form package, I was notified that these conditions would be requested, and I immediately put in writing my concerns about those conditions. Only now that I can actually address those concerns, because it's the Committee of Adjustment is now almost 1 year later after I applied.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Your Worship?
Yeah, if I might, again, Mr. Jarvison, the email that you had sent out previously indicated that there was no pre-consultation meeting, but in fact, you're acknowledging that there was.
No, there was no meeting. I attended the day that I was told there would be a meeting. Town staff was there, but the agencies did not show up, the region or the council did not show up. Therefore, the pre-consultation meeting was not held. Pre-consultation was held by email, where the town asked the region and comments by email, and that's what I'm referring to. There was no meeting per se, comments forwarded indicating.
Were you here on January the 23rd, 2015? Well, the staff says that there was a meeting.
No, there was not. There was no meeting, and I can ask the planner to identify that there was no meeting.
Okay.
There was no meeting.
And there was no meeting on March the 24th, 2016.
March 24th.
Were you at the town hall to meet with staff at any point?
Yes. I was here in November of the previous year to have a general discussion with the town planner. And then I was here for a pre-consultation, another meeting where a pre-consultation meeting was scheduled. I attended that meeting, or a supposed meeting, but nobody showed up.
Nobody from the town showed up?
The town showed up, but the two agencies did not.
All right.
For a meeting was not held.
Okay, well, the town was there, so you met with town staff.
Well, there was no meeting, though. We agreed that there was nobody that showed up, and therefore the town planner said, well, we'll solicit the comments by email.
Okay. Fair enough. There's a difference in views as to what constitutes a meeting and not. With respect to the Committee of Adjustments, is it your understanding that the Committee of Adjustments has the clear authority to waive any conditions that might arise, whether part of provincial policy or municipal policy?
That is my opinion, and the reason for that opinion is twofold. Firstly, your official plan, which is your planning policy document, describes archaeological assessments as not will be required, but may be required in the cases of minor variances and consents. It may be required. And that's what your official plan says. The ministry quoted to me that, as I indicated in my presentation, that these consents are usually triggered by developments, where I never had an opportunity to discuss with the agencies that I was not proposing any development.
Right. Okay, well, we'll clarify that during our questioning of staff. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything further? Okay, we're going to be dealing with this a little later. You can have a seat. Thank you. So I'm going to need a mover for PDS 10-2017, proposed zoning bylaw amendment for 4099 Niagara River Parkway. Councilor Butler, comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Carried. Moving on to PDS-11-2017, Fort Erie's Community and Bloom Program Update.
So moved.
Thank you, Your Worship. Comments or questions? Your Worship?
Yeah, I'm very much appreciative of the work that the Communities in Bloom Committee has done, and I know that their numbers have recently diminished. Ms. Hansen, were you here to answer questions or provide us with more information?
Yes, I am, if you have questions.
Questions, not more information. Okay, but I may have some questions.
Okay.
I'm feeling the committee's pain with respect to their current situation. There are some distinctions in my mind with respect to the Communities in Bloom Committee, which is more than an advisory committee. They are actually authorized to do certain things, and they have a mandate. I don't think they're comparable to the Mayor's Youth Advisory Committee, which is really simply advisory, nor are they similar to the BIAs, which we had the authority to refuse to appoint people that the BIAs recommend to us, but that's very rarely happened. And they actually are commercial entities which make their own levy among their own members, and so I don't think they're quite comparable. I'm sympathetic to the concern that there should be some compatibility among the group, because this is very much a working committee. These individuals have to be able to work together, and we expect them to do a lot more than just show up at meetings periodically and provide us with advice. I'm a little curious about how long it would take, and maybe this is where Ms. Hansen can help me, about how long it would take to work this process that's being proposed, where we receive applications, we give them applications, there's a meeting with the individual, then there's a recommendation from them, then it comes to us, and then we make a recommendation. Seems like a fairly burdensome process.
That's your question? Okay. Through you, Mr. Chair.
That's there's a question. There was a question in there.
Okay. The committee has discussed this at length, and we've also talked to the clerk's department in regards to this process. And even with respect to the process that's underway right now, where the town is advertising for committee members, and there's a 2 to 3 week turnaround before those members are recommended to council for consideration, the committee feels it can operate within 2 to 3 weeks. So they feel that very quickly, they feel this is so important, they've actually appointed a recruitment team or subcommittee. They feel that they can very, very quickly review the applications and hopefully sit down for a coffee with people who are interested in participating on the committee and just give them an overview of what the committee is about, what the mandate is, make sure that they have a similar focus and understanding of the intent and have the time to put towards it.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, particularly in view of the nature of the work that the committee does. And so the only alteration I would propose with respect to the Appendix 1, which is the flow chart as to how the vacancies would be filled, is I would like council to receive copies of the applications that are received. So at the same time that they go to the committee, council also gets a copy. So at least we know who's under consideration. And then, so the first orange box I would suggest should include council. Madam Clerk, should there be if I'm intent on that, should I move an amendment?
Yes, Your Worship.
Okay, so then I would move that the first orange box where the applications go to the committee should also include council. And other than that, I'll support this seems to me that it's necessary. It is important. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I suppose if there are problems in the future, we can always address those should they arise. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Questions on the amendment? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. So we'll move on to the report as amended. All in favor? All right, 1 second. All in favor? Carried. We move on to PDS-12-2017, the Planning and Development Services, Development Building and Bylaw Statistical Reporting for the fourth quarter 2016. Councilor Butler. I have Mr. Brady speak to this before we go to questions. Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, senior staff. I'd like to take just a few minutes to highlight the development activities that occurred in 2016 for the town of Fort Erie. All of this material is from the administrative report that you have in front of you this evening. And once it's completed, we would ask you to to receive it and direct staff to send it off to interested parties, including the EDTC. 2016 has been an extraordinary year in terms of residential development in the town of Fort Erie, with 257 new residential dwellings, the highest ever recorded for the town of Fort Erie. Almost 100 more dwellings than the peak of activity in 2007. Residential development is well distributed in the town, with 29% in Ridgeway, 21% in Crystal Beach, and 15% in the Spears High Point area. To ensure that this trend can continue, the Planning Department has been working on the final registration of 5 subdivisions that include River Trail Phase 2 in Douglastown, High Point beside the new high school, Crystal Ridge Subdivision in Ridgeway, Ridgeway Shores in Ridgeway, and Black Creek Signature in Douglastown. This registration of these 5 subdivisions anticipated in 2017 supply of lots to continue to fuel the building permits is being guaranteed. The type of residential development is also very well distributed, with 78% being single family and 22% being a mix of apartments, townhouses, and semis. This meets our goal as established by the town's official plan for more townhouses and apartments. 10% of the residential permits are for apartments, majority of which are being built in our downtown with the assistance of our CIP programs that have been in place for about 3 years now. This is the key to continuing success of the redevelopment of the town's downtowns. The CIP programs simply are working. The report on the programs and where we need to go in 2017 will be coming to Council in April of this year. Commercial development also continues to grow in the town. A slight increase in the building permits from 33 to 34 in 2016. However, the value of the development is up almost $1 million, from $1.3 million to $2.3 million in 2016. Institutional development has also been moving forward with 7 permits and $185,000. This is down from our bellwether year of 2015, where we had $32.5 million in institutional development, which was primarily our 2 new. John Brandt opened in 2016 and will follow with the new high school opening in 2017. The town is well positioned with modern school facilities. However, this will be monitored to ensure that the capacity is not overwhelmed by the strong upturn in residential development. Industrial development has seen 4 permits worth about $700,000 for additions and renovations. It was similar to 2015 with a value of about $500,000. Property standard performance is also mentioned in the report, with a total of 837 complaints investigated, up from 673 in 2017. Parking tickets are also up significantly in 2017. Our property standards people are extremely well aware of. Overall, the total value of building permits in the town for 2016 was $95.5 million, nearly one-third higher than 2015 and three times higher than 2013. Development activity is at an all-time high in the town, which means the property assessment is rising, particularly residential. Let me try and put these what's been going on in Fort Erie into a bit of perspective when I look at some numbers from the region. Now, these numbers that I'm about to give you are unofficial. I suspect that the Wednesday, some of them will become more official with the Southern mayors announcing some of them, so bear that in mind. Niagara Falls had 824 building permits. The majority of these were single-family dwellings. Catharines had 381 building permits, but student housing is a very significant component of that piece, and that was about 130. If you remove that, St. Catharines is about 250. Holland had 173, Port Colborne had 26, Grimsby had 537, of which 520 were townhouses and apartments. Fort Erie was second only to Niagara Falls when it came to new single-family dwellings, third compared to all if student housing is excluded from the St. Catharines. Never had a year like this before. So my final comment is that my crystal ball, for what good it is, indicates that 2017 could be very well similar to 2016. However, we'll continue to monitor and identify factual activity for council and report it on a quarterly basis. That you'd be interested in these statistics.
Comments or questions? Councilor Nutt.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Brady. In the report, thank you very much for the report. A lot of information in there, a lot of good information for the area, and I think one thing that should be identified is that this is a broadening of the tax base in Fort Erie, which will help to spread out the increased burden and help get us back on track with our infrastructure. In the report, though, it says that we only have a 12-year supply for lands. Now, the province has tasked us with a 40-year plan. So have you been identifying potential areas of growth to meet our goals based on the provincial mandates?
Through to the councillor. The 12-year supply has to deal with the draft, those that are plans and draft plans of subdivision. So the way that activity works on residential is that we have vacant land, which in Fort Erie we have a considerable amount of residential. Then they move forward and they become draft plan approved. Draft plan approved subdivisions of 12 years is a very high amount. Quite certain that the city of Niagara Falls and the city of St. Catharines. The number that's of some alarm to me is the one that says that in registered plans of subdivision we have 1.9, which means that using the average over the last 5 years, we have 2 years supply in plots. And that's why it's very important. That's why I brought to your attention that there's five subdivisions. That's the one that may happen. Now, I know, and it will be coming to your attention in the very near future, that we have other plans moving forward, none which are represented in this at the present time. The best example is the one in Fort Erie, which is the old Rio Vista Golf Course. The Rio Vista Golf Course doesn't factor into any of the numbers that you've seen today, and that'll be coming forward, I hope, in March or April to this after approval. There are other properties as well, which I know are moving through, they're just starting to move through the system. So I think it's fair to say that the town of Fort Erie is probably one of the most fortunate municipalities in all of Niagara because it not only has a good supply of residential land, it also has a market for that.
Councilor Nunn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Brady. Just one last comment in that I think the people of Fort Erie can take and find relief in this report and showing that the growth and also just to provide you with some feedback that I received from a builder who I was speaking to recently and said that he's noticed a significant improvement in the planning department's ability to get building permits issued, and they are coming out at a much faster rate. In fact, he said he has foundations poured, and he's waiting for builders to catch up to the number of permits that have been issued for homes that he's building. So thank you, and thank the staff for their hard work.
Your Worship?
Yes, I wanted to commend Mr. Brady, and although I know we'd like to take credit for all of this as the council, it takes a large team, and Mr. Brady, you and your staff are to be commended for the work that you do. It's also part of the other departments in this municipality because it's a joint effort. And as Councillor Nutt has said, there has been a lot of streamlining of the processes. I know that you've developed a very good relationship with a lot of the developers, the Home Builders Association, and so on. I compliment all of you and commend you for the work that you're doing and will continue to do. You've got a very good staff, and as Councillor Nutt has said, the community should be very comfortable with the fact that there are very skilled individuals working on this part of the town's future. I did have the same concern that Councillor Nutt has with respect to the supply of units and registered plans, particularly knowing that one of them is Jetmar, where there are about a quarter of the units, well, about a fifth of the units. That subdivision hasn't been touched since I came back to Fort Erie to practice law all those many decades ago. So I don't know what's in the future for that. Maybe one of the developers that's looking around for land will tune into that parcel. The other concern that I have, and you maybe can make some comment on this, even though we've got 12.7 years in draft approved lots, depending upon this five-year rolling average, if the five-year rolling average ends up being around 250, we have a 6.5-year supply, and I would think that would be some concern.
Mr. Brady?
Yes, it's a concern I'm looking forward to having to deal with.
Perfect.
As I'd mentioned earlier, draft approved means that there is some status to the land. The town of Fort Erie has a great deal of land that's not draft approved. So land that is vacant, that is form, or in the case of Rio Vista, that is nearly 100 units, which will be coming on stream in Rio Vista, and that land is
getting very quiet, Mr. Brady.
Well, I tend to be that way. So we have a good supply, both in terms of draft approved. Do we need some more? It will be helpful. I'm more concerned right now about getting lands registered, and we're working very hard on that. And I anticipate very shortly bringing a couple of subdivisions to council for final approvals. And so now things are in very good shape as far as I'm concerned.
And I note that there is some there's some servicing work that's going on now in a couple of the subdivisions. I noticed one in Black Creek, where it looks like there's a lot of dirt being moved around if they're not servicing. And the other one is. Is there some pre-servicing going on across the street behind Green Acres?
There is pre-servicing going on in a couple of subdivisions, yes.
Right. So that's obviously good news. And I suppose that you and your staff also have in mind the information that's going to be coming forward from the preparedness study that we expect to be receiving from Deloitte shortly, which will talk about the implications of growth for Fort Erie in the event any of the major that have been talked about for years here actually take off. That's something that you have on your radar.
The Deloitte study is being undertaken under the auspices of the EDTC. We've certainly provided technical input into it, but we've had absolutely no involvement.
But there will be implications, I presume, that you've contemplated in the event any of those large developments move forward, such as the impact on your staff with respect to inspections, with respect to building permits and that site plan agreements, that type of thing?
Certainly. We as a staff, in conjunction with discussions with the CAO, have always tried to keep on top of that. And as you're aware, and we're very thankful for the support that we received last year in terms of the additional building permit people to be able to keep us, to get us back to where we needed to be. But yes, we're keeping an eye on all those matters, but the actual study, I'm very interested in seeing what it has to say because I have.
Well, we haven't seen it either. It's but we're anticipating. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Brady.
Any further questions? Councilor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Brady, for your presentation. And I don't know if this question has anything to do with the planning department, but with the information and the news of all the new development coming forward, new housings, have we been keeping any data at all about the demographics of the people that the developers are targeting and what their needs and their wants are going to be? Now, I know there's going to be some implications here from the town hall's perspective, but what about preparing our business owners and maybe even the service industry or something? Is there any data at all as to what we can expect for who's moving in and something that we can share with the business owners in town?
Through Councilor Lubberts, we don't have any precise data on that, but we do try to keep a sort of a finger on that pulse. And basically, there's two groups who are moving into the new developments. One in the Crystal Beach and the Bridgeway area tend to be in the 55 plus category. That tends to be the group. However, the group that tends to be moving over on the other side in Spears High Point and Ashton Homes and those kinds of developments, they tend to be families, young families. So we have some differences, if you will. And then the downtowns, the majority of people who are moving into the apartments tend to be single professionals that are moving.
Yes, thank you very much. Is there any way that we can tap in with the developers that are moving forward? I'm sure that they would look at, they have a target market that they want to work with. And is there any possibility that we could work with them and see if they have any kind of data that would be helpful for our business owners? Is it possible? Do they have that? Do they do anything like that? Or is that something that we would have to look at outside of council, outside of staff?
It's a bit of a reach for the planning and development team. Perhaps that's something that the EDDC might want to take a look at.
Okay, thank you.
I just have a comment that I know Councillor Butler and I work very close with all the planning staff and the building inspectors and bylaw, and I mean, you can see the changes and you can see the people feel the changes. I think some of the areas where we've grown is how we mitigate developments with people who are living in the areas. And you have just a great way of trying to mitigate these problems. I've had numerous developments that have gone along the way, and Kara knows for sure. just the back and forth to try and make it all work. And I know that that is strenuous at times, especially when you're busy. The other area is Chris Miller's domain. We are really now increasing the intensification in the downtowns, especially in my ward where on Jarvis, I don't know how many new apartments we have, but holy mackerel. It's nowhere what we thought could happen. So you've been under a lot of pressure with lots more work and you've managed it in a very professional way. And it's being noticed by the public. And as the chair, I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you on behalf of my staff.
Okay, so we move on to PDS 13-2. 2017, the recommendation report appealed to Ontario Municipal Board of the Committee of Adjustment Decision on consent file. Yeah. Didn't eat my Wheaties this morning. Do I have a vote on the report? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. Somebody want to move that report that I was just talking about? Thank you. Comments and questions, Your Worship?
Yeah, I've got a few questions with respect to this directed to Mr. Brady, if I might, Mr. Chair. And the first relates to the comment by Mr. Darverson that there have been reasons given by the Committee of Adjustments for its decision. And I'm presuming that's a document that we haven't seen yet. But I think it was released today. Maybe the clerk would know about that.
I think I can answer that question. No, you don't have that today. It did come out today. And when the Committee of Adjustment makes decisions, they do, at least I hope, that they always provide some rationale for the decisions that they made.
Well, they gave very brief reasons for their decision as part of the document that they issued after the hearing, but it was only about three lines and didn't really make too much reference to some of the things that were referred to. Is there something more than that?
The only other thing that is the minutes of the meeting. But the rationale is, as you have it, is the explanation for their decision.
Okay. So if I might, Mr. Chair, the reasons given by the Committee of Adjustment state that their decision was consistent with the provincial policy statement. And is that at all related to the archaeological master plan or the request by staff that there be an archaeological assessment?
The committee believes that their decision is consistent with the provincial policy statement. I would beg to differ. I would strongly advise that one of the reasons that this appeal is before you is because their decision is not consistent with provincial policy, regional policy, or for that matter, town policy.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, is that because of the refusal of the Committee of Adjustment to impose a condition relative to an archaeological assessment?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I wonder if we could just get a little bit of background to help refresh our memories as to requirement for an archaeological assessment. For example, where does that all come from? The archaeological master plan, I presume.
The original place where the interest in having archaeology reviewed as part of development comes from provincial policy. However, in the town of Fort Erie, a number of years ago, the town took the proactive position to identify within its domain where there were high probability areas for archaeological. That mapping has then been appended, and it's used when we look to the need for archaeological studies. In this particular case, these lands are located in that area of significance.
So when this master plan was created, I presume that there were professional archaeologists that were involved.
Yes, sir.
And was there a public aspect to the study or the adoption of the master plan by council?
Yes, there were public. It was information was made available to the public, plus the implications of it were made available to the public.
And that was adopted by council how long ago, if you know?
I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head.
At least a decade ago, I'm thinking.
It was a considerable period of time.
Okay. So if I might then just move on to a couple of the comments that were made by Mr. Darverson and get Mr. Brady's response. The first one had to do with the fact that let me deal with our policy 11.4.1, I believe, is what he referenced, and that must be in the official plan. And that says that an archaeological assessment may be required, not shall be required.
That's correct. And that the methodology that we use to make that interpretation is that archaeological master plan. Now, if the area has showed low probability for archaeological, then the may would be utilized to say no. But since it showed high, the may is utilized in a fashion to say yes.
So from what you're saying, this particular property that we're dealing with is in an area that's been mapped as having high probability of there being some type of archaeological artifact?
Yes, sir.
And that's presumably the disagreement between the Committee of Adjustment and your staff, Mr. Brady?
Apparently.
So then Mr. Darbison mentioned that the ministry advised him that this type of condition is generally imposed where there's a plan of subdivision or some type of large development as opposed to infill. Is that your understanding?
It's certainly my understanding that this kind of condition is imposed where there's a large plan, as in a plan of subdivision. But we've also utilized it in terms of, and many municipalities, including Niagara Falls, has utilized it in terms of asking for archaeological studies on severances.
I'm also thinking about the south end of Fort Erie, where there are some vacant lots or some lots that some buildings that have deteriorated and are going to be torn down. Is there a likelihood that an archaeological assessment would be required if any of those properties were developed?
The provincial policy statement provides that if you have a piece of property that is already fully developed, and therefore it has become, and the quote it to use is, a disturbed site, then under those circumstances, there's no real need to do it, because if there was any materials, they would have been dealt with in the past.
So this, at this stage of the game, this is primarily with vacant land?
Yes.
You're concerned about. There was, maybe you'd like to comment on the jurisdiction of the Committee of Adjustment. Does it have the ability, but does it have the legal authority to properly disregard provincial policy?
It's more of a legal question than a planning question, but it's hoped that the Committee of Adjustment, and for that matter, Council, takes full regard to provincial policy when they're making decisions.
And so this would appear to be a disagreement as to, I fully expect that the Committee of Adjustment believes that it's following provincial policy. I don't for a minute doubt that they're intentionally trying to disregard the law. You're saying, Mr. Brady, though, that without an archaeological assessment being imposed as a condition of this severance, in your opinion, that doesn't follow provincial policy.
That's correct.
That's why we've got this report.
That's correct.
Now, if Mr. Darbison is correct and there is very little likelihood because of the shallow soil overlay of the rock that there will be any archaeological artifacts in the area, is that likely to be determined through a phase one assessment, or can you comment on that?
I think I can comment on it. Phase one assessments are paper assessments. Phase two assessments are in the field assessments. So the issue of the shallow soils and those kinds of things would be dealt with in a phase two.
Now, we've heard from Mr. Darbison that a licensed archaeologist who may or may not have ever been in Fort Erie has indicated his skepticism as to whether or not an archaeological assessment would be applicable here. Do you have any comment on that?
I believe the archaeologist was suggesting that it wasn't necessarily required because there was no development being proposed for this property. But if this council will remember, Mr. Darbison brought a zoning bylaw amendment to specifically allow a development on this property. This property that's being created is zoned in a fashion for a residential lot. If Mr. Darbison had asked for something which we refer to as APO zoning, agricultural protection only zoning, then certainly we wouldn't be asking for an archaeological assessment. But the zoning that's in place on the property as a result of the zoning bylaw amendment that Mr. Darbison asked for is to permit a single family home. Now, he has continually said to me, and he's certainly said to you, that they have no intentions of actually doing that, but the land is certainly able to have a single family home built upon it.
My understanding is that there is going to be a home built on this property. I don't believe that, and I believe Mr. Darbison would have made that clear to the archaeologist. I just have doubts about whether the archaeologist could give a clear opinion without being familiar with the archaeological master plan for the municipality and what zone of probability this particular parcel of property would have fit into, high, low, medium, whatever. So I'm just thinking that the archaeologist maybe didn't have adequate information to provide a clear opinion with respect to this property. That's my speculation. Mr. Chair, I'll give up the floor right now because I've been asking questions for a while. I've got a few others.
Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a few questions. Mr. Dobson came before Council on November 7, 2016, and asked for a bylaw amendment. It's my understanding that that bylaw amendment was so that a home could be built on it. So I'm of the same mindset as His Worship. I do have some questions, and to you, Mr. Brady, I'm hoping you can answer these questions. Is there any documented historical evidence on or within 300 meters of that property?
Not that I'm aware of.
Is there a known burial site or cemetery on the property or adjacent to it?
One of the reasons that the archaeological assessments are being required is to determine that precisely.
Okay, are there known archaeological sites within 300 meters of this property? Because Mr. Dobson said no, there weren't.
I don't believe so, but I can tell you that the ministry has confirmed with the region that an archaeological assessment was required. So based on the data that they have in Toronto, which they are not more useful than the master plan that we have in Fort Erie, both the province and the town are consistent in that there's a good probability of an archaeological issue on this site.
Okay, I have to question after the PSW debacle whether they just look at it topographically through Google Maps or they actually come here and visit, because we know when they hit us with a bunch of PSWs, they probably just did it topographically looking at a map, but that's a time for another discussion. Has the property been recognized for its cultural heritage?
No.
Are there evidence of two or more of the following conditions on the property? Elevated topography, pockets of well-drained sandy soil, distinctive land formations, resource extrication areas, early historical settlement, or early historical transportation routes?
To my knowledge, the early historical settlements, that's one of the criteria that is used by establishing it as an area of high archaeological value. And that's the only one of those that I think is consistent.
And my last question before I give up the floor is, have any of the other properties in this vicinity where we've built single family dwellings required an archaeological study?
We consistently apply the requirement for an archaeological study when a severance occurs in an area that shows high archaeological probability.
Councillor Wilberts and then Councillor Butler.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused as to whether or not there's going to be some building on this here lot. And when the zoning bylaw amendment came forward, I think it was pretty clear that that was the intention. But this evening, Mr. Darbison said in his presentation that in the consent application, there was no discussion of development. Can someone explain, did I hear that right, that there was no plans for development tonight?
I believe Mr. Darbison said that there were no plans for housing development tonight, but clearly the zoning that's in place on this property permits a single-family home to be developed on the property.
Yes, yes, that's what my next question I was going to ask, because under background here on page 2, the application was to sever a new building lot from the property. So I would assume that if you're severing a building lot, you're intending to build. And so I guess when it comes to the archaeological assessment or the potential of archaeological artifacts, my question would be, if something isn't found within 300 meters, does that mean that anywhere from 300 meters that there won't be anything found? Brady?
No, it doesn't mean that.
So having this designation on this property, that the potential is there, so we need to be aware of the fact that the potential is there. So if the potential is there, then the study will have to be done. Is that where staff is coming from?
That's correct.
And I asked a question earlier about the depth, the average depth around the property. And I guess now my question to staff is, does depth have any indication as to whether there would be archaeological artifacts on the property?
Brady?
And the depth of the soil profile certainly can deal with the volume of the archaeological, but even if there's only a couple of inches of material, the archaeological discoveries can still be made.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Chair McDermott. Through you to either Mr. Brady or our solicitor, if for example, we were to turn down this report tonight and he was able to sever that property and somebody purchased that property and started excavating for their home, and it was discovered that there was some archaeological findings, what would happen at that point?
At first, the police would be involved, and they would come to the site to determine if there's bones involved, whether or not the bones are recent or if they're of the past. The site would be immediately stopped in terms of developing further. We've had some history of that in the town of Fort Erie in the not-too-distant past. Usually the home builder is bankrupt by the time the assessments are finished because it's a lengthy process. And that's one of the things that we're trying to avoid by having the archaeological assessments.
Okay, thank you. And one further question related to that. Would there be any legal recourse for that person to go after the seller?
I don't think so. I think that would be remote.
Thank you. So one last question. Then it would be in the best interest of all parties if we were to vote in favor of this report and have the current landowner take responsibility and spend the monies necessary to do the archaeological dig now, because it would not bankrupt him, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to our planning staff, I noticed that we've touched on the province, the region, as well as ourselves, as far as this might be in contravention. I know that we're considering an appeal to the OMB. If we did not do that, what would the stance of the region of the province be in situations like this? I'm just wondering in a roundabout way, why would we spend our dollars to defend provincial or regional overarching policies? Would one of them come to the bat and get this done, or could they really care less?
Fair enough. To the question of spending your dollars, the dollars that you'd be spending would be Ed and Kira at the board hearing, if you will. I don't believe there would be anything beyond that.
No, lunch, I'm hoping.
I could assure you that the lunch will not be included.
Okay.
On the other hand, the region should, if they were doing their jobs, they would appeal this automatically. But under the circumstances that we're in today, I believe that what will happen is that they'll follow our footsteps. If we appeal, they'll appeal. If we don't appeal, they won't appeal. The province, I have no idea what they're going to do. They may appeal by themselves. I have been informed that the province is monitoring this file. I don't know what that means, but other than the fact that the region is telling the province what's going on.
Any further questions, Councilor Passero?
Just a couple comments. I mean, I'm torn on this one, and there's a couple reasons why. One is we have a committee of adjustment set up that we delegate these decisions to, so it's a fine line as far as how do we want to rein them back in when there happens to be a decision that we don't agree with. But secondly, the makeup of the committee and the structure of the committee is such that on any given night, you're only dealing with three members of the committee. So it's not as if these members of the committee are looking at these particular situations all the time. We could have gotten a very different result had it been 2 weeks later or 1 month later and it had been rotating through the cycle. The other thing that I find very curious, because I don't see it very often, is in the committee members' decisions, there was a dissenter. I don't see that very often with the committee of adjustment, that one person is actually opposed to the decision. Usually you have a decision one way or the other, and it is unanimous. In this case, it was a split decision broke by the chair. So that in and of itself tells me that there was not full consensus on this matter at the committee of adjustment level, which means maybe we should be taking a closer look. And I don't know if I would be feeling that way had it been all three members who had sided one way or the other. Those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Your Worship?
Yeah, I'm going to make a few comments, and I'm not particularly torn on this. I mean, this is fairly clear to me. This is our archaeological master plan. This is a document that we had commissioned not our council, but a former council had commissioned for good reason. This municipality has a significant history and of Aboriginal presence. Plus, it's got a long history of settlers in the area. I mean, some of these land grants in this particular area would go back to the 18th century. So that when we commissioned the archaeological master plan, it would have been specifically with a view to trying to make sure that we protect and preserve whatever artifacts there may be in the area. This was done by highly recognized archaeological firm with a company that has a lot of familiarity with the town of Fort Erie and has done a number of archaeological digs in the town. I was shocked when I first saw the map that accompanies the master plan. Because it is quite broad. There are a lot of areas in this municipality that are covered by this. And as Mr. Brady said, it happens to be an issue that arises not infrequently. For an example, I can tell you that just outside of Ridgeway, just south of Nye Road, there's a parcel of land that cannot be disturbed because of an Aboriginal burial ground. These things crop up all over the place. And the reality is that the streams and the water courses today aren't necessarily where they were 200 years ago or 500 years ago or 800 years ago. So that some of the concerns raised by Mr. Darvison, some of the observations that he made, some of the questions that were raised by Councillor Nutt have a context. And the context goes back thousands of years. This is our master plan, and I don't see any problem in us defending our master plan. I don't think the request for an appeal is something that is a slight to the Committee of Adjustments. They do a lot of work. The number of applications that they review, whether for minor variances or for consent applications, is fairly significant, and it's a reflection of the amount of development activity that's going on in town. And so on this particular one, I think that they were trying to accommodate the request of the applicant, and I think that they thought that they actually have the authority to waive this particular requirement in the context. It may be that they needed more information or didn't have enough information, or it may be that they made a mistake. I'd like to say I never made a mistake, but we all know that that's not true. So I don't have a problem with that. And it seems to me that if we're going to, the questions raised by Councillor Nutt really go to the whole purpose of an archaeological assessment. You know, is there something there? Was there a settlement there? Are there burial remains? These are all the types of things that are determined through an assessment. And this particular part of the town is within a zone that Mr. Brady has indicated has a high probability that there may be something. So what's happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I don't know. In terms of whether Mr. Darbison plans to build on this parcel that's being severed, I guess originally when I was thinking about this, I thought that it was important. But as it turns out, it's the creation of a new lot, and it's a lot that could be sold, and it's a lot that somebody else might run into problems. And as Councillor Butler has pointed out, if something were found, if the person doing the excavating decided to reveal that, public concern. But there's nothing to say that whoever uncovers something has to make that known to the authorities and might very well try to hide that. So on balance, I'm quite prepared to accept the recommendation of staff. I think this is the first occasion where we've been requested to appeal a decision of the Committee of Adjustments this term. And so that's a good indication of the very good working relationship between our staff and the Committee of Adjustments, which we do not influence. Those are decisions that we do not influence, and we have specifically, unlike a lot of municipalities, made sure that there is no council representative on the Committee of Adjustments to keep the politics out of it. So I think that we're very well served there. So on balance, I'm quite prepared to go along with the recommendation made by the staff, and I know that it may create some short-term delays for Mr. Darbison, but I think in the long term it's something that benefit him, and if it doesn't benefit him, at least we maintain faith with a document that we're relying upon to help preserve our architectural heritage.
Councilor Lubitz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to piggyback on some of the comments that were made, when I'm looking through this and thinking about, you know, whether we go forward with appealing the decision, I guess what might be confusing to a lot of people that are listening is we have our staff and then we have our Committee of Adjustments, which is within the same building as the town of Fort Erie. And I'm hoping that maybe through this we can maybe have some communication between the two departments in these types of situations. And Councilor Passero brought up the fact that, you know, there was one member of the Committee of Adjustments that didn't agree with moving forward the way they did. And so now here we are, and it's sitting on council's desk for the decision to be made. The archaeological studies and the area that's there shows a high probability. I would rather be a little safe than sorry and put someone else in the position where they might go bankrupt because something was found. Because my understanding is if it's found on your property, you're responsible for the archaeological digging and all the other things that go along with it, and that's why you end up being bankrupt. So for the amount of money that this might cost the owner today to move forward with this, with the building lot, I would say that's not a whole lot of money compared to what it could cost somebody in the future. So I would rather err on the least expensive side, and I'm going to support the report.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be as brief as I can. I think that you always have to be prepared that if something can be done, that it could be done. And in this case, it is going to be created into a buildable lot. I think that the applicant had options in front of him that would have taken this out of the equation. I think that if you want to get to an end result, you have to be prepared to go through the process to get you to that end result. And this is the path that the applicant had chosen. I'm going to go back to something I said earlier, which is the premise for my decision tonight. Had the committee of adjustment come back with an unanimous decision, my decision tonight would be different, but they did not. It was a split decision, which to me is not a ringing endorsement, and everybody was online, and I will be supporting staff's decision to take this and have it reviewed in probably the depth and detailed analysis that it couldn't have been done at the committee of adjustment level and definitely cannot be done in our chambers here tonight. We're just simply not equipped to deal with these matters. And to the mayor's point earlier, you know, I'm also proud that we do that type of delegation to the committee. And not only are we one of the municipalities that hasn't taken away their authority, we've actually delegated additional authority. In the last few years, we've given them the authority for fences and other things. Things that do sometimes become political, that really shouldn't, as part of the process goes, that these individuals are allowed to make those decisions. But in this case, they're split. I think we're split. I think at the end of the day, although I hate when things have to go all the way there, for everybody involved, but I'll be voting tonight to send it to the OMB and see what they have to say. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Opposed, if any, carried. Move on to new business inquiries. Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quickly through you to planning staff. Regarding the CIP programs, which have literally taken off, and that is a great thing to see. I'm looking forward to finally getting one down in the South End. But we do have an anomaly in Bridgeburg with the way that the CIP boundary is set up, that it stops about three properties short. I think originally it was done to mirror the Bridgeburg BIA boundary, but in the course of discussions with some property owners, it really should extend about three properties to the west. And I'm just wondering, what is the quickest way to act on this if council were willing to expand the boundary? What would staff's preference be to get that process started to at least deliberate it at the council level?
If, I'm aware of the issue. I've certainly looked at this one building, which, to tell you the truth, I don't quite understand why it's not in the CIP area, but nonetheless, it is what it is. If council would direct staff to bring a report on this matter, that will certainly move it forward.
So I would like to make that motion, Mr. Chair, that council direct staff to look at the inclusion of properties up to and including 218 Jarvis, westerly along Jarvis, in the CIP, and bring that back for council's deliberation.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder?
Well, we don't need a seconder in committee. But I do believe, Madam Clerk, you would prefer to have a motion to waive the rules of procedure.
That's only necessary at council, Your Worship.
Makes it even more confusing.
Yes.
Okay, comments or questions? All in favor? Carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions with regards to the business status report? Councilor, did you have them? Knock yourself out.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just an inquiry, and I think this has to do with our little issue with the sea containers that had been brought forward by the Lions Club. And I recognize that the mayor declared a conflict over email. But I received a phone call from another party that owns two commercial properties, one in Ridgeway, one in Crystal Beach, and they have the sea containers there as well. And after the discussion and during the discussion, something that I never even thought of, but it makes a lot of sense, is these sea containers that these people are using along with the Lions are a very well sealed unit. And the reason a lot of the people use them is because they're virtually rodent proof. Whereas when they close them doors and it's a steel container, completely weatherproof, completely sealed off, and they don't have any problems with rodents like you would with a shed or any other structure. So after the discussion with this person, they were telling me that today was their deadline to have them removed. And I did notice an email from Councilor Passero maybe requesting that we delay some of these requests to have these here removed so we can have a little more dialogue with the with staff and council. What I was hoping that we could do is maybe even have staff come back with a report to council as to maybe amending the bylaw to allow the sea containers on a permit basis, right, for commercial properties, so that they might be able to use them commercially, but not necessarily residentially. And I would hope that, I don't know if I need to bring a motion forward to have staff bring a report forward, or we can just request staff to give us some options as to whether it's, whether we can exempt the sea containers from our bylaw and make an amendment to the bylaw and then work from there.
If I might, Chair.
Go ahead.
Sea containers are prohibited uses in this town. We have spent quite a bit of money cleaning up a number of properties, removing sea containers and other problems associated with them. And we're continuing to move forward on a complaint basis in terms of sea containers. I certainly have no issue with bringing forth a report on sea containers and the issues associated with them. But at the present time, if council wished to have some areas in the town that would provide for sea containers other than industrial areas, then it would require amendments to the zoning bylaw and a full public process. So I just want the council to be aware of that.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Brady. And that's why I'm saying that if we did something like that, maybe something by permit, so that now we can put some stipulations as to where and who and also some conditions as to making sure that, you know, they're in good shape, they're well maintained, they're well, you know, they're used for the purpose that they're supposed to be used for, and so on. I would, my thought is that we would look at commercial properties only and not residentials. I know that they're prohibited in our bylaw, but I also know that if you go around and you look around with these sea containers, they're being used for multiple purposes. In fact, even on Facebook, you're seeing where they're using them for, they're building residential dwellings out of them. And so they're a pretty versatile item, but at the same time, if they're not well maintained, they don't look good, but that falls under the property standards, as same as we have with anybody's home or anybody's garage or anybody's barn. So, I just think maybe something that council can discuss and deliberate over a meeting with some other, maybe some possible recommendations as to making some amendments to allow these units to be used commercially.
Councilor Nutt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through yourself to Mr. Brady, I just have a follow-up question on something that Councilor Lubert said, because he seems to be describing that people are using these sea containers for some type of permanent storage, as seems that the Lions are doing that as well. what would be involved in converting one of these to a permanent storage structure? Is there anything in the building code or in the planning department that allows for that if they painted it, you know, put some siding on it or something, gabled roof or anything, and kind of made it a permanent structure. Is there anything that's allotted for that in the building department?
There's a couple of questions there, Councillor Nutt. From the planning perspective, what would be required would be a zoning bylaw amendment. So there would be need a site-specific zoning bylaw amendment. And if a site-specific zoning bylaw amendment came forward for a sea container, it's highly likely that we would ask for it to be placed under site plan control and have a site plan agreement to try to deal with the aesthetics and the permanency of the matter. That's the one issue. Building permit, yes, if that's the case, a building permit's going to need to be issued for the container. And we don't have a lot of experience in that area, so chances are, knowing my CBO, he's probably going to be looking for an engineer's report to determine whether or not the sea container is meets the appropriate sections of the building code. So is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. And are there mechanisms that we could utilize to deal with them? I think there are. The larger question that the municipality, I think, has to put its mind to is whether or not you want to see your commercial areas overrun with sea containers.
Anything further on that? Councilor Lubberts?
Yes, I guess my original question was, can I ask for the report or do I need to bring a motion forward to request the report? Yeah, I'd like to make that motion, that staff bring forward a report to give council options on amending the zoning bylaw to allow sea containers on commercial property.
Sarah?
Yeah, I'm always in support of getting additional information to make an informed decision. I would just like the report to be specific as far as what other municipalities are doing, and I probably would not support a blanket commercial endorsement. So if we look at the exclusion of BIA districts or CIP areas or, you know, staff's recommendations to point us in the right direction, but I definitely would not personally support just saying, hey, if your property is zoned commercial, bring in the sea containers. But I have seen different elements, as Councillor Lubberts has pointed out, where they're utilized very effectively and can be utilized very attractively, but you do have to get that surrounding landscaping and site plan control that goes along with it. Just sitting them down because people have too much stuff to store inside the building, to me, is not a suitable purpose. But if they're looking to utilize it and there's a strict purpose for it and it makes sense, then why not? I'm all in favor of looking at something. So I'll be excited to see that report comes back. I'll be dreaming of sea containers tonight.
Me too. Your Worship?
Yeah, if I could just get some clarification. My understanding is that the Crystal Ridge Center is not zoned commercially?
That's correct.
Okay, so then I don't have a conflict with respect to this. We spent a lot of time establishing standards in this community, and I can't think of and we've spent a lot of money cleaning up neighborhoods, enforcing property standards. I can't think of a worse road for us to go down than permitting sea containers in commercial areas. I'm sorry, but I have a difference of opinion on that. I'm not going to support the request because this relates to commercial properties. I think that it's just going to create too many problems.
Anything else? All in favor? Opposed? Peter. We'll go to the business status report now. Anybody have any questions on that? Seeing none, that's all I have. I'll return the chair to you.
Thank you very much, Councilor McDermott. And that takes us to Corporate and Community Services. Councilor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now open. We have no delegations or presentations tonight. But we'll deal with report COS 032017. Can I have a mover? So moved by Councilor Zanko. That report is on the floor. It's the revisions to the Municipal Act. Elections Act. Pardon me. Comments or questions? Chair recognizes your worship.
Thank you. I agree with the clerk in her concise and detailed analysis with respect to these things. This is another one of those made in Toronto solutions for a Toronto problem. And far too little consultation, far too little thought, far too little regulation with respect to how you would implement it, and far too much cost that the province is intending to impose upon municipalities if they go down this road. So thank you very much, Madam Clerk. I think you did an excellent job.
Are there any other comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
I fully agree. Some of the things contained in here are nothing short of ridiculous, and I'm disappointed I can't be doing my ballot selfie next time around. Through you to the clerk, is there anything coming up that will require council decision-making as far as making timelines in the future?
Madam Clerk?
Through you, Chair, the only thing that comes to mind is the next deadline on my mind, which is May 1st, which is for alternative voting that will come to council.
Well, Mr. Chair, through you then to the clerk, so none of these is kind of like a negative opt-out where we don't have to systematically say no, 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 no. It's a matter of the provisions are there. Should we want to go with one of them, then we would bring a resolution forward to start the process.
Madam Clerk?
Through you, Chair, that's exactly correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed, that carries. And I will turn the chair back to your worship.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Are there any, that takes us to scheduling of meetings. Are there any meetings that anyone has scheduled, committees, Councillor Nutt?
Yes, on the 8th, I'll be attending the Southern Tier Mayor's Luncheon. I look forward to hearing you speak.
I'm planning on being there myself. I don't know how looking forward to my comments I am. My wife left town, so I guess that tells you what she thinks of it all. Councillor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Tomorrow we have I have two meetings, actually. A BIA meeting at the Crystal Beach Fire Hall at 6 o'clock, and a Communities in Bloom meeting here at the council, or at the town hall in Conference Room 3 at 6 o'clock. And Wednesday at
5 o'clock?
Yes. 5 o'clock, Infrastructure Services meeting and Conference Room 3.
Any other meetings? Councillor Passero.
Just to notice, the meeting of procrastinators has been postponed once again.
Okay. If there are no others, I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Your Worship. Council and committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 7:38 p.m.
Those in favor? That is carried. Thank you, folks.